The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome one and all to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us here, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista.
Evening, hello. My mic is hot.
KCNR 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. If you'd like to give us a call down here, Ben would be happy to patch you through or just take your question off air. We can do either one of those. It's 530-605-4567. Again, that number 530-605-4567. Or if you just like to type things in, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Anyway, I was talking with the missus, and I was like, okay, well, what would you like to talk about on the show today? And she mentioned, a term that we've used before, but I really want to kind of break it down, and that's the term deglazing. Right. Is there a particular reason that you wanted to chat about that?
Well, I think it's interesting that deglazing happens because you have glazed the pan. Mm-hmm. I don't think people think about that, that you've developed a glaze off of any type of meat or whatever, that those bits, is it the fond across the bottom, everything that sticks to the bottom, that is flavor that you want to capture and keep. And I think a lot of people probably just take the meat out of the pan, set it on the plate, and then wash everything else down the sink.
Yeah, you don't want the flavor going to the dishwasher. You do not want it going to the, to the sink. And, so basically the idea of deglazing, and we have to back up because there's a couple terms here. Well, one is when you take and make a sauce, because when we deglaze, we're making a sauce. When you make a sauce in a pan, we call that a gravy. When you thicken up a, pan juices, we refer to it as a gravy. When you thicken up a stock, boiled beef bones or chicken bones or turkey bones or clam shells, whatever it is, and drive that flavor out and then thicken that up, then we refer to that as a sauce. But you can make a sauce in the pan through this process of deglazing.
So called a pan sauce.
Pan sauce, exactly. So let's talk about, let's just go over an item maybe people may have heard before. It doesn't really matter about the specifics of it, but we're going to talk about chicken piccata. Okay, so that way we can kind of break it down into a particular recipe. So we're going to take this chicken breast and we're going to pound it out nice and even. One thing about chicken is that it's especially breast, there's not a lot of fat in it, so it can dry out. You do not want to overcook it. So you want to pound that out to where when you put the chicken in there, it's the same thickness all the way across.
Because if you don't, you've got this big lobe with a big thick center and little itty-bitty thin teeny tiny edges.
Exactly. So you want to pound that out and say, generally speaking, we will usually lightly flour. You can or you can't. Lightly flouring will help two things: caramelize the exterior of the product you're sauteing, and it also help tighten up a little bit of starch component. So it'll help tighten it up, but also actually helps keep it from sticking a little bit as well. So we're going to take this chicken, we're going to get a pan, and then we're going to have our oil just barely coating the bottom, and we're going to get that to a point where it starts to glisten. You can put your hand over it and feel how hot it is. Maybe put your hands 5 or 6 inches above it, see if it's hot. You can flick a few little drops of water. If you do flick water into it, you want your fingers to be moist, not wet. Just dip them in water, kind of flick it off a little bit, and then flick into your pan. You don't want a lot of water going in there because it will splat.
You'll have a mess all over your kitchen to clean up.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, thick bottom pan or a cast iron or a carbon steel pan. We're not talking a little thin pan. You need something that's got a good thick bottom on it.
Yeah, I definitely want to cook with thick bottom pans, regardless of the material. And we recommend stainless steel, because stainless steel is going to be the cleanest. It's going to have the least amount of possibility to kind of, you know, either give an off flavor or add unwanted, you know, components for minerals, things that were had seeped into the pores of your cast iron maybe in the last time you cooked on it. Kind of like, think about when you're barbecuing outside and you cook fish on your barbecue, and then if you don't scrape that off the next time you cook pork chops, it's gonna taste like fish. Yeah, gonna taste like fish. So basically, we're gonna put this chicken breast down. It's slightly floured in a medium hot pan of oil. We're gonna let that cook till it just starts to brown. We're gonna add our garlic and our shallots. They're chopped up, and then we're gonna flip that chicken over, and then we're gonna deglaze it. Now, in this case, with the chicken piccata, I would deglaze with white wine. If you don't want to deglaze with wine, you can deglaze with a mixture of water and lemon juice.
So deglazing, just so people understand, you're taking that glaze, and by adding a liquid to it, you are pulling up all of those bits and flavor that are stuck to the pan and creating this flavorful sauce.
Exactly, exactly. So nothing's going to waste. So when you deglaze, again, as Mrs. Chef mentioned, it's just pulling all that flavor into that, whatever that liquid, that broth is. And then, you know, you're cooking the chicken until it's ready, and you're going to add the rest of your ingredients. So in this case, with the chicken piccata, it would be a little bit of fresh lemon juice. It'd be your capers, a little parsley if you want, maybe a little salt and pepper, white pepper. And then go ahead and remove the chicken when done, and then you're just going to reduce this down. And we're going to add a little bit of cream. Now, here's where it can be a little bit tricky, because when cream thickens up, when cream reduces, it will thicken up. And so you have to bear that in mind as well. But if we wanted to tighten this up a little bit, because maybe it was a little looser than we wanted, then we would add what's called a beurre manier. Now, beurre manier is kind of, it literally in French, it means kneaded butter, like kind of kneaded together, K-N-E-E-D, kneaded together. And you just throw little pieces of it in there, you know, maybe the size of your pinky fingernail, not very big.
They're kind of like little roux balls.
Yeah.
Balls of roux.
Except uncooked.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you're going to allow those to go ahead and tighten it up. You can do that also by maybe taking a butter pat and just rolling a butter pat in flour and throwing it in there. Butter pat, I think a lot of people know what those are. They're just the little pats of butter you get. Maybe if you go to steakhouse and order a baked potato, maybe it comes with something like a butter pat.
So probably like a tablespoon of butter you would add?
Again, it's going to depend on the amount of liquid that's in there, and you're not going to drown the chicken in wine, so there's probably not going to be all that much. So you're probably talking more like a half a teaspoon, and then especially with the cream, it's going to reduce. So we've got our capers, our garlic and shallots went in first. We flipped over our chicken. We added our white wine. We squeezed it with a little bit of lemon, flipped it over, squeezed it with a little bit of lemon juice. A little salt and pepper, a little bit of cream. Remove the chicken when done, when cooked all the way through, 160, 155, and rising, but you want a finished temperature of 160, so it's nice and juicy. And then you're just making your pan sauce. And again, that's when you're going to add your beurre manier to kind of tighten it up. Again, in this particular idea, or recipe rather, we're using cream, so that's going to reduce. But let's say this was a steak, and you're making a little bit of a demi-glace or a brown sauce, you would have any other thickening agents in there. So then you would just, you know, you might take it just a little bit more than this recipe. But, and then remember we're adding raw flour. So you want that starch flavor to cook out of the flour and just reduce it. Here's one key, if you can remember this kind of generic, you know, thought when it comes to cooking is, anytime you thicken something up, doesn't matter what it is, anytime you thicken something up, soup, stock, sauce, doesn't matter, anytime you thicken it up, you want to reduce the temperature. You reduce the temperature and allow it to just kind of simmer out, cook that starch flavor out. But, and the main reason for that is the fact that it's just easier to burn. You know, if you got that really high temperature because you're sauteing, you might want to use the term pan frying, but again, you want to reduce the temperature and allow that sauce to finish, and you're all set with chicken piccata.
Now, what else could you use besides cream? Could you add some cheese to thicken it up?
Yeah, you could thicken it up with some cheese, but cheese wouldn't be an ingredient for chicken piccata, but it could be used for a variety of things. So there you go, deglazing from the why, how, and when. Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Kyle, Mrs. Chef. We will be taking a break and back in just a moment.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the fall.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Get ready to explore the expansive universe of aviation and cutting-edge space technology in Turtle Bay's newest exhibition, Mission Aerospace, presented by Dr. Eric and Tiffany Blassingame and produced by Minotaur Mazes, on display at Turtle Bay Museum January 18th through April 20th. This highly interactive maze puzzle is sure to inspire all generations. Mission Aerospace at Turtle Bay Museum is free for members and included with paid admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. And hey, moving right along, we had a great discussion of deglazing. We're going to follow that up with cooking without a recipe. And the reason I wanted to chat about this is a lot of times we're just not going to take the time to pull out a recipe. And also, we're going to get to a point where we've understand a recipe enough and we've developed it where we're very comfortable and confident with it that we might want to just go ahead and make something and then kind of just, you know, change it around a little bit.
Well, I think that's the great thing about making those pan sauces and deglazing, that you can pinch at something. Like, they got some meat, you could deglaze it with a variety of different things, tie it up, put it on the plate, boom, you can have something different every night.
Mm-hmm. We actually refer to that as intuitive cooking. Basically, you're exploring different flavors and different ideas, different thoughts, way things might kind of fall together, different techniques, different things that you've learned, and then just kind of taking it and making it your own. And I know that the other day was cooking around the house and looking at around at what we happen to have.
Mystery box.
Mystery box. There you go. And I actually used four things up that were leftovers. We had some leftover spaghetti. And we had a little bit of Parmesan cheese. We had like a half a tomato. We had a little bit of salsa. And we had a couple pieces of meatloaf. So what I did is I took this spaghetti, which we had a few days ago, and it was still, you know, perfectly fine. I just heated that up and added the salsa. I took that little half a tomato. I diced that up and threw it in there. Again, we don't want any foods going bad. We want to make sure that we use up our inventory. We don't want to throw anything away because that's a 100% waste. You know, it's 100% waste if everything that you throw in the garbage. So again, we had the spaghetti, we had the diced tomato, the salsa, a little Parmesan cheese. I diced up that meatloaf. Actually, I broke it up with my fingers. Added some pepper flakes, a couple strips of bacon, and a little bit of cream. And we just took our spaghetti and turned it into bolognese.
Yeah, so basically you kind of extended the sauce by giving it a little more of a bulkier meat sauce.
Yep, exactly. So a bolognese is an Italian meat sauce made with beef and pork. So bacon would be the pork component. We had two totally different dishes, with the start of just one. So we just made spaghetti, and it doesn't taste a whole lot like spaghetti because we took it in a different direction.
It was very good. That was our lunch today.
Yeah. So it's playing around with things. It's being, experimenting, being experimental. And one of the things that helps you is kind of learning how to layer those flavors and kind of understanding what the different flavors are. Now, remember, we have what our tongue picks up, our sweet, our sour, right, our salty, our bitter, and then our umami. Those are the five things that it picks up. And then just think, okay, what do I want to add to this? And then think of an ingredient. Okay, just taste it. Taste something that's in front of you and say, you know what? I wish this was a little sweeter. Well, so add some honey. You know, maybe it's got a variety of other things, but maybe you want to add some honey. Maybe you want to chop up and add a dried date to it. I mean, something that's got a lot of sweetness to it, as opposed to just adding sugar. Sour, if you wanted to add some sour components, you could add, you know, mustard is mostly all vinegar, so that's going to be sour. So will any type of vinegar, a little bit of red wine vinegar. So you take a taste of dish and say, "Ooh, I'd like some sour." Well, maybe put a little splash of vinegar in there.
Well, the other night, I took leftovers from three different meals, just like you did. We had asparagus with one meal. We still had a couple portions left over. We had polenta with another meal. Still had several portions left over. And then I took those two things and combined them with yet a third item from another meal with some fish and pulled together a whole different meal, but taking three different components from three different meals and just mixing together and then changing the flavor of the polenta a little bit. I put a little bit of miso paste in it to give it a little more umami flavor, and then I add a little bit more water and a little more stock to make it a little looser. So you can take something and then just change it just a little bit.
Yeah, let's say you want to add bitter. You want to make something a little more bitter. Let's say you have a nice salad, but you're like, gosh, you know, this salad has all these components, but maybe just a touch of bitterness. Well, maybe then you mix in some greens, mix in some sprouts, you know, give it that, a little bit of that fiery, peppery, kind of a spicy kind of a flavor, and salty. You know, what do you do for salt? You know, you can add butter, you can add cream. Cream's high in sodium, especially reduced cream. But there's a lot of things you can do. If you want something to be umami, remember umami is that description of a flavor that's kind of meaty in it. And a couple of things that we always think about, and that are kind of go-tos when it comes to umami are bell peppers and
mushrooms.
And mushrooms. Yeah. Both those work, they just, I mean, if you ever grilled like a portobello mushroom, yeah, you do it right. And that thing's coming out like steak.
Especially if you barbecue it, with mesquite smoke flavoring on it.
Yeah. I think that was one of that mesquite flavor exactly is going to give you a little bit of more towards that meat direction. And I think that, probably that, the grilled portobello is one of the first kind of items that the vegetarians kind of flock to. I used to see a lot of the, portobello mushrooms, cooked, you know, grilled and then used in place of a burger patty.
Well, now they're doing cauliflower steaks, too.
Cauliflower steaks.
Yeah, they're a big new thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's just think about, you know, the cooking process. For example, if you're going to do a cauliflower steak, I would blanch it first, season it, and then grill it. One of the things about grilling things that are completely raw or cooking things from a raw state, is they may not cook all the way through. Like, in the middle, it might be a little more, you know, texturally challenged than the outside, might be a little crunchy. You want it al dente all the way through, and you can control that by just simply blanching it first.
And that's where combination cooking gets to be a lot of fun. You're adding two different cooking methods to one item.
Yeah. Well, so, you just have to learn all the cooking methods, and you're set.
and that is in the Veggie Cookbook. We talk about combination cooking and that a lot.
The Vegetable Makeover. Yeah, we have an ebook that you can get by going to Culinarily Yours. How exactly do they find that? Explain it to someone like me that doesn't even like an iPhone.
Go to culinarilyyours.net. And there's right there this pop-up. You can get a discount. You can also go into our shop and buy it. It's very easy. You just click in there, add your email, and
Culinarily Yours. You know, hey, go on to Culinarily Yours and just kind of fish around and look around. There's a bunch of free stuff on there. Matter of fact, I think just about everything is free except the veggie book. So take a look at it. And we always appreciate the support. But there's just some really good foundational things that are on there. I know we have a barbecue. I mean, it's not quite barbecue season, but we do it. It will be here eventually. And there's just some great stuff. You know, certain things that are just kind of tricks or tidbits. Or I think that the internet calls them hacks. Or maybe, I don't know if they do anymore. But they used to be called hacks.
Yeah, and that's like the barbecue sauce Jim was talking earlier, taking one base flavor and then taking it in a little different direction, taking a barbecue sauce and maybe adding some ginger to it, taking some barbecue sauce, adding a little bit of peach jam to it. So that's the same thing with when you're learning to come up with things out of the blue, taking one base item that you are comfortable with mm-hmm. and then maybe adding one additional little flavor to it that might take it in an Asian direction or in a Mexican direction or in an Italian direction. But take something that's base and neutral that you're comfortable cooking and then go a different route with it.
Yeah. You know, and think about the protein. And, I mean, is it a protein that works well as far as a sweeter item, like pork, you know, pork chops and applesauce. So you could use pork, and whether it was grilled apples or chopped apples or an apple compote
or pineapple
or any other type of fruit, you know, anything that's got that sweetness, because pork just, you know, and chicken will absorb that well or, you know, marry together well. I think the pork's probably better. I don't use a lot of fruit when it comes to beef. I might use, you know, currants or
maybe some
or
cherries,
maybe raspberry. Okay. Yeah, raspberry is a good one for beef. You know, but just kind of understanding what works. I think a lot of this really comes down to kind of the art of seasoning. You know, learning balance. You know, be thinking about when you taste it, because remember, you're going to taste this before your guests are going to taste it. So if there's a time to change it or fix it or adjust it, it's before you serve it. So I know that everywhere I've ever worked, I've put containers of tasting spoons all over the kitchen because I want people to taste it. Because just because I've made something countless times, I don't know, maybe the tomatoes aren't as ripe as they usually are when I do this, or maybe it's a different type of maybe even a canned tomato than normal, or a different season where something might be fresher or something might be less fresh. So be thinking about those things. But think about, how am I going to balance this? Does it need more salt, acid, fat, heat? Does it need more heat? Well, this would be great if we needed more heat. Well, there's a big difference in heat if I'm going to add Tabasco sauce versus the heat if I'm going to add some chili flakes versus the heat if I'm going to add some sambal leek or versus the heat if I'm going to add some garlic paste. So what, you know, you have to kind of be thinking about, if I'm going to add heat, am I going to do it by adding some crushed ginger?
And you don't have to add a whole lot.
Oh, no.
You don't have to, you know, The pasta you made today, it was a tad warm for me. It was with me with the chili flakes. It was right on my top of my heat index. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it would have tasted as good without that little bit of heat, because it does just get your taste buds going and wanting you to, you know, drink and eat more.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to satisfy, you know, if you're going to have a flavor profile that's satisfying, I think that satisfaction comes in a balance of everything. It's not overly salty, overly bitter, overly, you know, sour, or overly umami, or overly sweet. I mean, there's a balance, and that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that balance. That doesn't mean it might not be on the sweet side if it's a dish that's meant to be sweet. But either way, you want it to be balanced.
And you don't want any too much of any flavor, because you get those taste buds being overwhelmed. Right? I just can't eat any more of this. It's probably why at the end of time, if we get to dessert, we're so looking for something else to eat, because we've had so much salty or so much sour. It's like, you know, I just need a little something sweet to take me in a different direction, so I'm not overwhelmed with too many flavors in one direction.
Well, salt and sweet are just, you know, two things that go great together. You know, that's literally one of the key components in dessert. And even in baking, if you're making a dough, you add a little salt. You're making a custard, you add a little salt. And you're not doing that to make it salty. You're doing that to enhance the other flavors. Again, I don't want a coconut cream pie that's salty, but I would want enough a touch of salt when I was simmering that cream to be able to bring out the extra flavors. So things to think about, and we're going to go ahead and take another break here at the bottom of the hour. Again, we really appreciate you listening to Cooking Like a Pro, and we are going to be back in just a moment.
Goldleaf Nursery is celebrating 50 years in business. Yep, 50 years. Seems like yesterday our nursery and landscape business was just a little seedling itself. But the truth is, we've been serving Shasta County for 50 years, growing shrubs, trees, and veggie plants since 1975. Also, as a licensed contractor, we've landscaped shopping centers, city parks, and custom residential homes. The sale will start now and continue through springtime. All 1 gallon and larger shrubs and trees are on sale. With spring right around the corner, we have a good selection of spring shade bloomers, such as azaleas and camellias, and many other sun blooming plants to enhance your landscape in those sunny locations in the yard. This is a perfect time of the year to start preparing your vegetable garden. We have organic soils and fertilizers, including a full line of John and Bob's Organics, and we carry non-GMO seeds. So rest assured, you can have a healthy planting crop in your vegetable garden. If you have not been to Goldleaf Nursery, we invite you to check us out and see for yourself why we have so many customers tell us what a unique nursery we have. Goldleaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course, and 1/4 mile from Airport Road.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Feeling a wee bit green with envy for a proper St. Patty's Day feast? Well, put on your dancing shoes and head to Black Bear Diner. We're bringing back the classics you crave, like our legendary corned beef and cabbage. Slow roasted, thick sliced with all the fixins. It's the real deal. Tender corned beef, melt in your mouth cabbage, and that horseradish cream sauce. Oh, it's a lucky bite. Find your lucky feast Friday through Monday, St. Patty's Day weekend, at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. We'd like to take this moment to personally thank Charlu's, the whole Charlu family down there, Kathy, the whole team at Charlu's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Charlu's located just south of us here at the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, one of the very few family-run restaurants left in the area. They're open 7 days a week and serving lunch and serving dinner. Delicious pasta and salads as well. And also they're making Italian gelato, creamy, house-made. And it's all in a relaxing, unhurried family atmosphere. And don't forget to enjoy the incredible beer wall, offering up a great variety of beers, frosty IPAs and ales and porters and ciders. And you can actually, what it is that you go up this wall and you can try them by the ounce. That's great. And also their rewards program, Best Deal in Town. You can go in there and you can actually get instant rewards by signing up. So save time and get some takeout. Always available at charlews.com. Again, charlews.com. Let them know that Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef personally sent you. And check out their bouncy house. Bouncy house. You got a kid and you have a birthday coming up. Give them a call, man. It is so cool. Charlu will actually even teach them how to make pizza.
It's not just a bouncy house. It's an entire...
It's like babysitting.
Suite.
Yeah.
You just sit there.
Yeah.
It's a big arcade in the back. All kinds of things.
Yeah. Real cool. So anyway, Charlu's. Let them know that we sent you that way. So I wanted to talk a little bit about one pan wonders. Kind of like it's like single pot cookery, like one pot cooking. Because a lot of times, it works well just to have that one pot, and you don't have as many dishes to cook also. But some of the things I'm thinking about when along those lines are things like stews, a roast could fall into that category, any kind of a soup. So just, you know, things that you can make that you'd cook in a pot. I think that probably the initial one pot cookery would have been the crock pot.
Yeah, definitely. We always cooked our meat.
Yeah,
cooked
meat.
Put the roast on in the morning, set it and forget it.
And pour it in. And you got the thing about a crock pot is you have that lid on there, and it's just all that flavor is really cooking in there. And that's one of the things you need to think about when you're cooking your corned beef for your corned beef and cabbage for St. Patrick's Day coming up, because you can lose so much flavor. So I personally roast my corned beef. I roast it for a couple of hours, and then I let it sit in there for a couple more hours and allow that connective tissue to break down so it gets nice and thin, or excuse me, nice and tender. And then just, you know, slice it thin. And for me, cabbage, potatoes, carrots, those are always good for St. Patrick's Day. It was my grandma and grandpa's wedding anniversary, and it's actually my daughter's, and it's my daughter's first anniversary.
Are they going to have corned beef and cabbage to celebrate?
I don't know if they have corned beef and cabbage in Tennessee.
I don't know either.
I mean, I imagine that the Irish are just about everywhere, but, you know, it's something that, you know, have some fun with it. And as far as sauce goes, one of the things that I traditionally do is the same sauce I serve with lamb, and it's a hollandaise sauce, which is a mother sauce, one of the five mother sauces. And I, to that hollandaise sauce, that emulsified egg lemon sauce, I add a Dijon mustard, and we call it, the French call it Dijonnaise, and oh, it's so good on corned beef.
Are you gonna make that next week?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely going to. And then, something else I wanted to talk about was cooking projects, because I think this can be a lot of fun, and make those on the weekend when you have time. You have time to, a little extra time to make something fun. And you might be making something that's going to, you know, go through it later on in the week, but things like bread. I know that you like to make bread. I know,
yeah,
Mrs. Chef likes to make bread.
Not a midweek thing to make.
Yeah, it's not something that you want to make when you're rushed.
Yeah, no, it takes time. Yeah.
But also making pasta. Now, making pasta is real simple. It's really easy, and it's also real fast. But it's fun, and it's something that the family can do together. And one of the things that I make sure that I've always done as a cook, as a home cook, is to show my family what I'm making. Whether it was, you know, my boys, my daughter, you know, all my children, because I want them to be able to know for the rest of their lives that this is how you make it, a cheesecake, or this is how you make it, because that will stick with them and their menus will start to expand.
How about making pizza?
Making pizza, another thing, because you're making a dough, just like you're making bread. And it, depending on whether you want to make a deep dish, I mean, you can almost use a focaccia bread. Some of the other things that we do as families, tamales. Tamales is always a family thing. Something that's just fun, kind of like a crab feet. A Wellington, we talked about that last week. Something that's going to be a little more complicated, but you can make it together and you can have some fun and learn, you know, learn as a family. Things like homemade sauerkraut, kimchi, even condiments or sides, you know, work real well. Like in our family, we've always made our own pickles. I know that Mrs. Chef has always made her own pickles too, with Dad, and bread and butter pickles, the best bread and butter pickles, and olives. Mom and Dad used to always make olives. We were raised on our own homemade olives. But again, it's just find something and make that like a project. Make that some kind of a fun family event.
I think the most memorable thing I can remember growing up is when we got out the ice cream churner.
Ice cream. And yogurt's another one. You know, and you make your own cheese. But, you know, getting back to ice cream, there isn't – I've never found an ice cream that was made – in a retail setting, or in any business that tastes as authentic as making a French vanilla ice cream. And remember, ice cream is just custard that is churned that had, you know, creaminess and air to it. Not as much creaminess as a gelato. But homemade ice cream, you got that unique cream flavor that you just can't really get out of anything
there's
else.
There's a different iciness to it. And depending upon the maker you use, you know, we have a Don VA one that you can't really find too much anymore. That's a hand crank that you use in the freezer. You can get one that's an attachment to your KitchenAid. Mm-hmm. I remember the bucket one.
Yeah.
You'd have to put the ice and the salt in.
Rock salt and
ice.
Yeah,
I think it was the Rival, and it had the thing that went across the top and locked in. They sit there and...
It's like a wood bucket.
It was like a wood bucket.
Yeah, that was the best.
It was on the counter.
Actually, my mom's brother, Richard, used to always make I remember he always made the homemade ice cream, and you know, it just sets off everything else. You know, the pie a la mode that's coming along with it, or the cake a la mode to have that wonderful flavor of homemade ice cream is... And again, that's a real fun project, you know, especially in the old days, because you had to take turn cranking. Mm-hmm. Like one kid, you know, couldn't crank it all. But, you know, the salt, you know, I think that'd be something that'd be fun to do, with the modern version of an ice cream churner, but the
find old, an old fashioned hand crank. That's why I like the Don VA one. Yeah. It's, you could do it by hand, and it takes time. It takes an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you trade off every couple of minutes, and who's going to get to turn the crank?
How about making your own butter? Another simple thing that, you know, I always think of, like the people out on the prairie. You know, I don't know why that is, but churning butter with, you know, with using you know, fresh cream. Like, I know that we used to get extra cream in our milk. It used to be just massive cream because our milk was delivered in glass bottles and left on the porch, you know, and back in the day. And this was just the best milk ever. And I remember that we would get so much calcium out of that when we quit getting the fresh milk. I was talking to my dad, and he told me the story about how many challenges we started having with needing with a lack of calcium because our bodies were so used to getting that fresh cream. Just amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. So.
Yeah, if you can find raw milk, is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so I also wanted to mention a few of the different things that are out there that are going back to kind of the one pot cooking, and that's things like chicken pot pie. And when you're thinking about a single cooking pot of something, remember, think about that there's a protein, a starch, and a vegetable. So those three things are generally on a plate for it to be a complete meal. Now, what percentage is entirely up to you. You want a 20 ounce steak and a baked potato that's, you know, 12 ounces, and then, you know, half an ounce of broccoli, then fine. You know, it's, but for it to be complete, it really needs those three things. A protein being a meat of some sort or a grain, a starch, potato, rice, pasta, and then some sort of a vegetable. And you can do that like in a stew, because right in a stew, you have your meat and you have your gravy, but what else do you have in there? You have your potatoes, you have your carrots, your different root vegetables.
When I think of one pot cooking, I think of chili.
Chili?
Chili.
Yeah. Well, you got your protein, you got your vegetables, you got your tomato that's going to be in there, you got your onions, you got your garlic. I know the one thing that we do a lot is just like, we call it refrigerator soup. Right, so it's just got a broth, and then whatever is not tied down in the refrigerator goes in there. But when you do that, just make sure it's things that the flavor balance and profile sound, it makes sense. You know, you're making, you know, a mushroom soup, then it doesn't probably make sense to dump mustard in it because it's just not a flavor profile that would work. But, you know, there's other things, you know, that would, maybe barley or some other type of grain, because mushrooms have that kind of a earthiness as well.
How would you make a chicken and dumplings in a crock pot?
You,
or even an Instapot, because an Instapot is actually cool because you can use the searing before you go into the slow cooker.
Yes, you can. But the thing that a dumpling needs is steam. So whatever you're cooking needs to be simmering or boiling, because a dumpling's not going to cook without steam. So when you put your dumplings on the top, you know, basically a dumpling, think of a dumpling as a biscuit, and a biscuit is, you know, cooked, baked, but then also high humidity to have that steam is always a good thing to make a biscuit, especially if you want it to be moist. But you know, chicken pot pie is another one. You know, think of if, like, if you don't want to make an omelet, then make a scramble. But if you're doing something for breakfast, but just think about adding your vegetables and adding your protein. Maybe it's ham and cheese with tomatoes and olives. And, but again, just, you know, be creative, be fun, enjoy yourself, have, you know, be creative. So, you know, one pot cooking, just think about it. It's all cooking in one pot. So then be aware of when you add things as far as how long they're going to take to cook. You know, you don't want to add something that's going to turn to mush before, you know, and, you know, the meat's going to be, you know, raw while the potatoes are going to be mushy. So just balance it. Maybe the potatoes or the carrots go in a little bit later or the fresh peas go in right at the end. So
you usually start with your sauce when you're cooking those?
Yep. Start with your sauce and allow those to simmer till tender. We're going to take a quick break. Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be back in just a moment.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Henry Clay Warhawk Rebellious. Backed by popular demand, this limited edition Toro is sure to please. Another fine example of Nicaraguan tobacco blended by AJ Fernandez. Complex, smooth, chocolatey Habano wrapper, a satisfying smoke with a clean finish. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
I'm Marilyn.
And I'm Abby, her BFF.
We're in Riverfront Playhouse's production of Ripcord by David Lindsay Abair, directed by John Welch.
March 7th through the 23rd, join us for this hilarious comedy about feisty elderly women, us,
who become roommates in a retirement community. See how our comic, playful rivalry leads to a series of funny and unexpected pranks.
Grab your tickets now at riverfrontplayhouse.net, sponsored by this station and these amazing pro arts businesses.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Welcome back, Cooking Like a Pro. Hey, we've made it this far. You've made it to the final segment. We appreciate you listening, and it's always fun. We enjoy talking about food, and that's kind of our thing. So hopefully you enjoy listening. So we had a few things I want to chat with about here in our final segment. One was cooking on a budget, but almost more gourmet cooking on a budget. And I wanted to give some kind of examples of what it is that you might do. And for example, let's say you want a lobster dish. So instead of buying 2 8- or 10-ounce lobster tails for roasting, just get one, dice it up, and then extend it with, you know, pasta and make a lobster mac and cheese. So you're still getting that good flavor of lobster, which you were looking for in a lobster dish, but you're only literally spending half the money on the protein. A steak would be the same thing. I know because we probably, what would you say our average protein is, the size of our protein when it comes to beef?
Probably 3 ounces.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe 4 or 5 at the most. So yeah, it's, you know, so we can get, you know, a 12-ounce steak and it literally will feed 2 or 3 of us. So just kind of be thinking about that. So you don't need a lot. And I'm from an era that the way I was raised, that you ate everything that was on your plate. Everything that was in front of you either went in your stomach or went into the stomach of the large black lab underneath the table, but your plate was clear.
And you didn't tell anybody.
You didn't tell anybody. You maybe even figured, waited until there was a distraction, you know, before you did that. But again, just think of those kind of elevated flavors, and how you might want to change that into something that you know you can extend, still having that flavor, but extend it. And again, by using any number of things, you know, adding like it's kind of like think of maybe making like a chicken chop suey, you know. So there's you're using half as much chicken and this ton of vegetables. Well, when you're eating it, you're not going to be sitting there saying, "Wow, there's not enough chicken in here." You're just enjoying a dish, but you only used half the amount of chicken, so you were able to do it at less of a cost. So anyway, we talked a little bit about St. Patrick's Day. So, you know, whether, we didn't mention desserts, grasshopper pie, that's a good one. You can look that one up online. Just a kind of a cream de mint, white cream de cocoa. Remember, white cream de cocoa is a white chocolate flavor. And you just blend those together and you put them in with a heavy cream, and you can put them in an Oreo cookie crust, something along those lines. That always works well. Or, you know, graham cracker crust with butter to hold it together. That works well. But we talked about the corned beef and the sauce. So, you know, a salad is always kind of nice, you know, for St. Patrick's Day. Come up with a nice bread, maybe a soda bread, you know, might be something that's nice. But the thing about today is back in the day of my training, we didn't have, you know, computers or certainly nothing like what we have now, and certainly didn't have cell phones. And that was back in the 1900s. And, you know, it's just so much different now. You can literally, you know, plug in, you know, St. Patrick's Day meals and probably get, you know, just literally hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of options, and different thoughts. So, you know, take advantage of it. You know, especially take some of the guesswork out, because if there's a recipe on there, I'd like to think it's okay to assume that somebody made it. And you have that thing on there with the stars. Yeah, look and see how many stars they got, or how many people have looked at it or liked it. Or my wife's the tech person here, but I don't really know what to look at to see if the recipe has any validity to it.
Well, you can take a look at a recipe and know if it's good or not. But yeah, usually votes.
Well, I can, but yeah. But maybe not the average person.
Yeah, so usually the votes, or you know, who has given comments on it, usually it's a good thing to look at.
How many stars?
Yeah.
How many stars they got? Yeah. So anyway, something else, back to school meals. That's when we kind of talk about what we chatted about on the one pan, you know, one pot, you know, cooking, cause when you're back to school, you really want things because everyone's busy, so you want to come up with a meal that's simple. So maybe you do your shopping. I would recommend something like this. Just kind of think about I always want the relational aspect of food. So I think you should go shopping together as a family, not just have mom do it. And to be honest, in our family, I absolutely love to shop. I think if there was an Olympic sport, I would be in it. But, you know, go do your shopping on Saturday, kind of come up with your meals, to come up with your menus for the week, and then do your prep that's going to help you out on Sunday. And it's just going to make your week so much easier. I wonder how many people just stress on, oh, what are we going to eat tonight? What are we going to make for the kids? That we've already used all four of the recipes that we always use, right?
Yeah, I think most people do.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what's the average number of recipes that people kind of rotate? You know, the average menu, if you would, or if you will, what, maybe a half a dozen items, maybe eight? Well, I mean, you can only have, I mean, now, I personally don't mind eating the same thing 3-4 days in a row. That's fine with me. But, you know, to bounce it around and so, you know, monotony, I mean, you know, to kind of stay away from it, you know, maybe you want to come up with different things. You're getting all those flavor experiences and you're trying new things, you're experiencing new things. But again, you know, think about that moderation. So in the sense of, you know, paying, or purchasing rather less volume of things, when, you know, again, I mean, you put a 12 ounce steak in front of me, a 16 ounce steak, I'm going to eat it. You put 3 ounces in front of me, I'm going to eat it. You know, either way, I'm going to be satisfied with it. You know, so I'm not like we're going to go hungry, but again, that protein, which in this day and age with the cost of things, you really want to bear that in mind. How can I stretch my dollars even further?
And that's where you go with more of your grains and your potatoes and bulky type foods. What do you say? You're stretching it. You're stretching your meal.
Yeah, starches. And again, those are, you know, a lot of people are careful about the carbs, you know, that you're going to, whether they're, you know, quick carbs or long carbs, you know, whether they're carbs like potatoes that are going to store energy or carbs that basically come from sugar that are just going to be really quick energy. I remember when we were in high school, our coach would always give us a candy bar before a race. You know, just because, or, you know, maybe on the way to a race or something, because it's always that quick energy, that quick, you know, burn this off quick.
Snickers satisfies.
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, so easy, you know, meals for busy families, back to school stuff, you know, think about making that a family event. And not only is this bring, you know, families together, you know, which we talk about a lot on this show. You know, there's the talk around the table and the importance of that during the actual meal, where, you know, you're really just kind of feeding the relationship, feeding the, you know, the kind of the soul of the family. So you can really find joy in that. You can find gratitude in that. It can be something that's exciting. It's certainly something that's going to be creating memories, something that's, you know, that's vital. I have so many memories. Most of my memories, I would say, evolve around food.
I can see it. I think I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, again, birthdays, anniversaries, everything from weddings to births to, you know, all of these things that we celebrate.
We celebrate with food.
Yeah, we celebrate with food. And I think that's pretty culturally appropriate, like around the world. I think that's mostly what people do. I know that, matter of fact, in many places in the world, they do it better than here. You know, where again, we've mentioned this before, where in America we eat to live. We eat for more energy to get on to the next task, whatever that happens to be. And our taste buds don't get an opportunity to really experience, you know, the multitude of possibilities that they could have. Where in other countries, they'll work, but the main part of their day is getting together in that celebration, right? That celebration with family. I mean, all these things that we can remember, you know, about our past and just to be able to enjoy ourselves and have, you know, just good thoughts.
You put eight people around a table. It's a board meeting and you are bored. You put food in front of them, the whole atmosphere changes. Everybody starts talking, and you're busy with your hands. Yeah,
I think there's a bumper sticker in there somewhere, but it's always been the case, and I've noticed that too in my restaurants where people can be sitting there and they're just staring at one another until food shows up. That's one of the things my dad always said. He said, "Make sure you fill people up. You got to make sure you feed them to fill them up, and you get something to them quick, because you know when they get their bread and they get their garlic butter." And again, this is way before someone invented that evil term of a la carte, where you know you just order one thing and that's all you get, you know. But you got soup and you got salad and you got bread and you got whipped garlic butter, and then you got your meal with your steak, and then, you know, good luck on dessert, because there wasn't a whole lot of room left. Because again, as a chef, we want to fill that, as even a home cook, you want to fill everybody. You don't want to stuff them. Nobody likes the feeling of being stuffed. I mean, you know, that's, you gotta pace yourself. Know what your limits are.
To-go containers.
Always a good thing. And then you take those to-go containers, and what do you do with those? Go right back to the very beginning of our show today, and you cook without a recipe, and you use those things up. So anyway, there's a lot of different things that you can do and enjoy yourself out there. But again, cooking needs to be, you know, something that's from the heart, something that we enjoy, something that we take advantage of to the fullest, and something that brings us together. And not only does it bring us together, but it brings us together around the table. So we appreciate you tuning in today, folks.
And if you want to look for previous podcasts of our show, go to cookinglikeapropodcast.net.
Yeah, Apple, Spotify. And anyway, look us up, and we'll talk to you next week. God bless you out there, folks. Appreciate you listening to Cooking Like a Pro. We'll talk to you next week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.